Hello, humans. Welcome back to the podcast. Hope you're having a wonderful morning, afternoon, evening, wherever you are in the world. So today I have a new episode with Alex Sesto. This guy has been on the radar for some time. Back in January, I did a bunch of IG lives. I'll put a link to our discussion in that. So we connected then. And I probably first got told about Alex from Louis Blake, who I had on the podcast. We talked and dived into psychedelics then. So, of course, that was going to be on the agenda here. I feel it's a powerful conversation whenever I get the chance to talk to someone and dive into that world, the mystical world, the interesting spiritual connection we do have with certain medicinal plants, and diving into the unknowns as well. So he is a movement coach. He also makes up one half of the Flow State Collective and is involved in the Human Experience event, which also we touch upon. So all links to that will be in the notes. And he's doing some powerful things in the space of healing, physical and emotional. And as I'm sure he would agree, you can't separate the two. And also perhaps more in the reconnection to our spiritual essence and authenticity. And I feel like Alex's mission is definitely to get more people tuning into that. I really admire Alex, the way he speaks to things and his ability to be so articulate with lots of things that are so passionate to him. So yeah, it was a phenomenal conversation. I respect and appreciate him so much. So yes, it was a powerful conversation and I hope you enjoy. In other news, I have just launched my Men's Weekend. It's live on my website. Link to that will also be below. And this is taking place in the Lake District in a 30-acre private woodland. It's going to be a super intimate experience, limited to 6 places. Now, this is my first men's retreat, so it's going to be extra special for that. But also, that is reflected in the price. So as this is the first experience that I'm putting on, I wanted to keep this low as possible to get everyone who wants to be involved there. And I understand that there's, of course, a transaction that needs to take place and the value that needs to be put on this. But at this stage, I really wanted to keep costs way down. So this is going to cost people £150 per person, which is 2 nights stay, Friday evening, all day Saturday, and leave on Sunday with an optional hike in the lakes after. So the venue is in south of the Lake District where we will be camping. I wanted to just read something from the website, the landing page that I've put together. It speaks to what this is going to be about, and I've called the event Facing the Shadow, and it's about turning our inner gaze toward the unloved and unaccepted parts of ourselves while we hold shame, judgment, guilt, or fear. Using different practices and techniques, we can shine new light on these aspects of ourselves to learn more about what limits us and holds us back from reaching our potential. We do this to transform into the men we want to become. I'm going to teach tools to really get to know yourself a little bit deeper. There's going to be lots involved, so it's going to be quite the experience. We're going to be doing ceremony, fire and cacao. We're going to be open and honest discussions. We're going to be doing workshops around archetypes and breathwork, ice baths, walks, wild swimming, yoga and movement in the mornings. And we'll likely do some ecstatic dance in the evening. So that doesn't really sum it up. That's just a container of give you a little dose of what is going to be involved. It's actually quite difficult to define what will take place over the weekend, and largely the most impactful things will come in the moment. But what I'm trying to do and aiming to do is to provide this container so we can speak directly to the things that hold us back, that are uncomfortable, and host a safe space so we can explore these things and really activate those aspects of ourselves that we can look at and understand a bit deeper. So it's 2 nights camping, private woodland, all organic meals included in the Lake District, and the date is Friday the 12th to Sunday the 14th. You can head over to bodymindpractice.co.uk/mensweekend or click one of the links held within the description of the podcast and fill out an application form. So that's correct, I am doing applications. This isn't just something you can just sign up to. This is going to be a process. I'm going to be listening to the people that apply to this and selecting the ones who I feel are most ready to dive deep. But without further ado, I'll get back to this podcast. So it is live on YouTube, so you can head there to watch it, and I hope you enjoy.
Oh, mate, it's really good. I have to get that recipe.
It's so challenging when something is really good to be mindful and just take
your time. And I'm thirsty. So.
And now you're like, cheers. I haven't got any now. Happy solstice, mate.
Happy solstice.
Yeah.
Nice, nice to be out on the ground, on the earth.
Yeah,
for man. It, under the sun.
Yeah, the weather's incredible.
Yeah, it really is. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, let's just dive in, man. Mm-hmm. I'm glad we could make this happen.
Yep, same.
Appreciate it. In your stomping ground, that is London. Is this where you're from?
Yep, born in London, North London. Although, like I mentioned to you, I've never actually been to this park, so it's the first time here. But yeah.
You'd always remember this powerful conversation.
That's it, exactly.
Jesus, it's that hot. I'm like, should we take our tops off? We might get more viewers.
That's it, mate. It sells, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. So yeah, tell me a bit about you and your journey to like doing what you do now. I think that'll be quite a good start. Obviously, it's where do you start?
Yeah.
But yeah, what? So obviously now you're kind of full time teaching. Mm-hmm. What was life like before that? And were you always, connected to the ground as you are now? Was that kind of life growing up? And did you always have that the perspective of moving your body and mm-hmm. and things?
Yeah, no. So I was very athletic as a youngster. Mm-hmm. Got into sport pretty early on. Was good at football, and I remember actually the first day that football just clicked, because I remember I was training somewhere. I think I was about 5 or 6, and I remember one day I just came home and I was just like, I get this game, and it just something clicked for me, and I just understood it. And so I played football a lot in my youth, and then ended up signing at Arsenal when I was 10. Mm. And started training with them, and ended up going full time with them in a program when I was 13. And then they took us out of the schools that we were in and put us all in the same school so that we could monitor us and allow us to train more, basically, from a younger age. And then, sort of stayed there until I was 18. Mm-hmm. And then got released, which was very difficult. Probably the first, maybe not the first, but it was definitely a traumatic thing to go through at that age.
So were you very focused on becoming professional?
Yeah, I was, yeah. It was something that was reinforced. We live in a culture that's football mad, my family, football mad. Mm-hmm. So it became my whole identity and ego was, you're the guy that plays for Arsenal, and that side of you is celebrated and mm-hmm. Like massaged, and like it's and so it's easy, I think, before you're aware of even what an ego is, to just allow that identity to just become completely absorb you. Mm. And so that's where I was at. And then when that was taken away and I was released, it was ego shattering. It's like all of a sudden you're not the person that plays for Arsenal anymore, and you have to figure out who you are.
And what age was that?
That was 18.
Yeah.
And then also the same year I got released, got in a really serious car crash, and a guy jumped a red light, hit my car. My car span around, hit a guy that was crossing the road who passed away. And I just did not know how to emotionally deal with that and all the other stuff that I was going through. So it was like my way of dealing with things was just to be like, right, push all that down there. Mm. Don't ever deal with that. And thought, okay, I can operate from this place.
Which also is massaged in our culture, right?
Yeah.
It's almost like the thing.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's just, I think, sort of my youth and the age I was at, just with it being a lot emotionally to deal with, I didn't have the tools capable to deal with it at that time. Went to a few other clubs over here, but I found it very difficult going on trial at places and just trying to play my best and be free and able to express myself on the pitch. I felt the pressure quite a lot. I felt the nerves a lot, and you're only there for a short space of time, and I think the fear kind of limited me from being able to fully show what I was capable of when going on trial. So I didn't get signed to a club over here, and I'm going out to the States, had a scholarship out there. So I went to uni and sort of saw it really as an opportunity to just carry on playing football with a group of lads and enjoy myself. Didn't massively care too much about the academic side of things. Mm-hmm. I did a marketing degree. But then after 4 years, I'd kind of fallen out of love with football, to be honest. I came back and played a little bit here, but I just wasn't enjoying the fact that I had to go to training twice a week as well as work, and then like travel far away on the weekends and
a lot of pressure to show up.
Yeah, so I just thought actually I'd rather stop, and then I stopped playing. And the other decision that I made as well was I thought I should get a job in what I studied. And this was the start of a difficult few years for me, because I got a first time I had an office job. I was sat down at a marketing agency. Mm. It was the first time in my life that movement and exercise wasn't a structured part of my week or my day. Before that, literally from the age of when I got signed, I was playing football all the time and moving and running around. And then I was sedentary. And I didn't understand even at that age how much that was a big part of who I am and what I needed to do and how I needed to express. And so I kind of became depressed, sank into a bit of a depression. And the way that the medicine that I had for that was to be very excessive in terms of my social life. And I got really involved in the rave scene over here, started organising underground raves and flying in DJs and DJing and after parties. And it was fun. It was really good fun, but it's not sustainable.
What parties were you? What kind of music and parties?
It was sort of underground techno, okay. That kind of music. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. That was heavily my background when I was in Leeds.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
I was massively, into...
So you'd know that, like, the Fuse boys that came over there, like, they'd come play at Mint?
Grew up in Mint Club. Yeah. Like, it's literally, like, what, everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, referenced to, like, so many things for 4 years.
Yeah.
But no, I don't really know Fuse.
Okay.
It's interesting.
Yeah, yeah, that was, sort of a big group of my friends all kind of met around that party and connected really well, and I've met, I'm still friends with those people to this day, and I see that phase of life really as it was medicine for the fact that I felt very constricted and constrained in my working life, and this was where I could feel free and feel all the amazing feelings that you feel when you're under the influence of those kind of substances, and then that kind of music's there. It was, it was beautiful. I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, so
it was very excessive.
There's a lot more than just raving. Like, there's so much going on there on, like, a cellular level, on, just releasing and moving your body.
Yeah.
And, it's, I guess it's got an image and a label attached to what, like, clubbing is. But I feel like the people that I'm following and the people I'm speaking to are definitely rewriting that story of, like, what it means to be going out clubbing and how freeing it is and how moving your body... connecting to just the community part of it. We had such a strong community in Leeds, and you go out and there was 90% of the people you'd know in the club.
Yeah,
and that was several days of the week. Like, it was a proper community. And then that left. Well, I left because it isn't sustainable, as you say. And then you're like, ooh. And I dropped into a wave of just didn't really know how to put it into context. I was just. Felt a bit lost in a way. It was like lacking meaning, but it really was actually, now looking back, the community side was so strong, and then it's like everyone leaves and disperses, and then it's so easy to be on your own in the West.
Yeah, yeah, no, I mean, everything you're saying massively resonates. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sense of community, hadn't found before, and it was groundbreaking for me, in that before that all I'd known was going out and drinking and that kind of culture and all the things that come along with that, and which is very disassociative. It's not a different kind of energy in the room when people are under the influence of those things. But then I remember the first time going to a rave, and it was like, wow, everyone's so, like, friendly and nice, and it was bringing out all these beautiful qualities. Like, you go out to outside for the smoking area for a bit, and you make friends with someone, and then you're like, it's just, it was totally different, and I didn't even know it kind of thing existed. And then I found it, and I was like, this is incredible. And it gave me so much for a long, long period of time, until, like I say, it wasn't sustainable, particularly in the line of work that I'm in now. So I kind of did that for pretty intensively for about 5 years.
Is that where you met Louis?
No, didn't. No, we were kind of in different circles. He was, sort of more in the sort of West Endy kind of vibe, which wasn't my scene so much. But I'd met him before that, because I was out with the Norwich first team when they got promoted, and he was looking after the team there. I met him and he was very young. I was like, oh, this guy's got his head screwed on. And thought he was really interesting because he was young but just super switched on. And so we kind of stayed connected, but then we ended up kind of reconnecting a lot later. Mm-hmm. Once I had my first sort of psychedelic experiences and this kind of thing. So we connected through that. But yeah, so after a few years of diving into that, there was one summer where I quit my full-time job. I had a relationship breakdown. It was like 9 years. And I had my first ever psychedelic experience all in the same summer. It all kind of coincided to this point here. And it was just pivotal for me. I'll never forget that that kind of transition, because it was a point where I'd really become so disillusioned with looking at the future that lay before me of staying where I was and kind of following this path of progressing down this career ladder that didn't inspire me at all. And so I had this first psychedelic experience, which also then just made me see that we're so magical. We're so much more special than I ever had realized before. And it was beautiful, and it sent me down this pathway of learning, you know, what we really are. And the other thing it did as well was it made me realize that I need to do something in the world that makes me happy and keeps me engaged, that I'm proud of, and that, you know, and is aligned with my authenticity. So what I think that those initial experiences did, and I think they continue to do, is to align me to my own inner authenticity, to who I really am.
Cuts through the bullshit.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, and all the kind of, I guess, illusions or the stories we're told in the more modern times, or, you know, since the dawn, I guess, of like when we were transitioning away from more natural ways, and all the stories about what it means to be human and what your place in the world is.
Yeah.
It does just cut through that. So I'd love to get your take on like what you believe is happening there in those experiences, because it is largely like unknown, but when you have them, it's just you like you said, you don't really look back at life the same.
Well, we do know now that there's a part of the brain called the default mode network, which is where it's this network of operations where you hold your sense of self, you hold your sort of self narrative, so you don't wake up in the morning every day like, who am I, like, how did I get to this point? You know, you've got this story in there that is the arc of your life that you kind of hold around who you are, and oftentimes that story or that, you know, that idea, that sense of self, there's a lot in there that doesn't serve you, and there'll be things in there, or like there'll be traumatic events that have happened that make you see yourself in a certain way that is limiting you. And so when you take any sort of psychedelic drug, I don't like to call them drugs, to be honest, they're medicines, but when you have a psychedelic experience, the default mode network shuts down for a period, and then once it comes back online, what it feels like to me is that some of those limiting stories or you know, ideas around who you are, or some of the subconscious programming that you've picked up for the early years of your life, is almost rewired, and you've let go of some of it. So some of the stuff that happens, you can be quite conscious of the lessons and the downloads that you get, but a lot of the stuff, I think, happens on a subconscious level. So it's almost like a reprogramming of it. So you can't quite put your finger on exactly what it is, but you've changed after that experience, and so it's given you something. And so it's kind of a little bit of a dodgy science as to what's happening, but and also sort of felt experienced as well, you know. You get these, what I like to call downloads or insights, where you literally, it's like someone's just shot a dose of truth into your mind about something, and that could be around you and your own story, or it could also be around just the nature of reality and this kind of thing that you kind of get. And it's beautiful. And, you know, the first psychedelic I ever did was DMT, which is very powerful, very strong, but it made me sort of see that these things are not to be sort of messed around with, and there's so much to learn from them. So I didn't look at them as these recreational things like I had with other things that I'd taken in the past. I saw it more as a way to, how can I improve myself? How can I learn more, or understand more about who I am through engaging with them? And yes, there's a real difference between recreational use and then ceremonial use, which is what a lot more what I'm involved with now in terms of the psychedelic space and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it gave me so much, you know. It's, like I say, it was pivotal. It made me realise one of the first things I needed to do was, yeah, figure out what I want to do in the world that is aligned to who I am. The other thing was, I hadn't ever met my biological father. It was like, right, you've got to meet this man. You have to sit down in front of him and have a conversation with him, find out who he is. Because, you know, if you're, you know, there's a saying, it's something like, you know, a tree can only go as strong as the roots it is. And if you're disconnected from the roots and you kind of not, you know, you haven't confronted that part of you, or then I think, you know, you can't evolve, you can't grow forwards. And so that was powerful. I did that, and so I met him for the first time at the age of 29, which was really, really interesting. Mm. And something that needed to happen for me to move forward. Yeah, and then from that point, it just felt like things just started to flow. I just started to, you know, figure out exactly what I want to do and how I want to do it. And it's, yeah, it's been nice, pretty much, yeah, 9 years since then, since that.
Is that where Sesto Flow was born?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, that's, yeah,
I love it.
Kind of come about. I mean, yeah, the classes that I teach called Flow State with Bo.
Yeah.
And, yeah, we're really interested in that state of mind, being fully immersed in the present moment with energized focus where time disappears. And we found that a lot of the training we were doing, we were cultivating that state. So it was almost like this moving meditation. And so we thought this is a really interesting thing to explore. How can we get people to engage with their physicality through this lens? And so, yeah, that's where Flow State became. And then, yeah, Sesto Flow, it worked, it rhymed, and it kind of fit.
It's nice, man. It's powerful experiences, and you speak to it in such a grounded way. Mm-hmm. So where's the bridge really with the movement stuff? Because I know how powerful it is just to have a movement practice. You know, I've gone out and I've formed it myself, and it teaches you a lot about, I mean, you can tap into states, discomfort, like, understand what's going on underneath it all. Like, it's a real introspective process for me, like just having a movement practice and just experimenting and moving in different ways with nothing, you know, nothing else, no tools. That for me, the movement side of it, it's so much more than just physical. It's, yeah. Do you want to just give us your kind of insight to that, of like how it does kind of formulate those kind of experiences as well?
You know, this has been, I think, one of the big problems with just our culture at the moment, the way we separate everything, you know.
Yeah.
From the point in the medical world where we have specialists for the heart, specialists for the liver, specialists for all these things, and none of them know what the other one does, but it's a whole system. It's a system that everything affects everything else. And in the same way, the way you move affects your emotional state, posture affects your emotional state, and there's so many things to confront with a movement practice. You know, the idea of being a beginner and coming up against failure and how that feels is something that come up against time and time again. When I first started this sort of stuff, I was trying things, and even now I'm failing all the time. It's not like now I don't fail.
How beautiful is that, doing it, being seen doing that, like, that's such a pivotal moment when you realize that it's you're gaining so much from, like, just showing up and just going out and facing those fears of just moving in a direction. And being that first person on the dance floor to, like, yeah, you're feeling like everyone's watching you, and it can release a lot of trapped and restricted kind of emotion.
Absolutely, yeah. And you realise that, you know, failure is the only way to progress, really, and it's through failing better. It's like, fail, okay, and then learn, and fail again, and then learn again, and keep doing it. Orientate towards failing more and more, but failing better and better each time. And I think we've become so afraid of failure that it limits us from even trying. And I think I was definitely in a limited space like that at one point, where it's like, well, I don't want to try these things because the likelihood is I'm going to fail, and that's going to feel horrible. So then just don't do it at all. So it's like that. But that's no way to live. It's kind of changing that relationship to it. And yeah, you know, feeling just free, you know. I think as well as men, we grow up and it's almost like there's this rule book as, oh, you're supposed to move your body in this way as a man, but not this way. You know, my hips aren't supposed to move like that. And it's like, it's just movement, you know, and it feels good to express and to move. And, you know, I think when we have traumatic events, you know, we store those things in the tissue, in the body. So mm-hmm. being able to move, you're literally moving energy around the body. And there's a lot of work being done in that space now, which mm-hmm. I think is amazing and healing in so many ways. But yeah, it's, you know, there's no separation and disconnect between what's happening in the internal world and in how we express and move in the external world. You know, if you're someone that's rigid with your views and opinions, you're probably going to be quite tight as well. It's like, whereas if you're kind of more loose and fluid, then it's yeah. kind of going to express through your physicality.
That's exactly it. I feel like my mind opens up as soon as my body does.
Yeah.
It really, you can just sense it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say that you talked about like being a specialist. How does that kind of show up for you? Do you try and, because I catch myself spreading myself quite thin mm-hmm. with a lot of stuff, and it means I can't narrow in on something. But I can narrow in on being a generalist mover, say. Yeah. But I guess we have specialized in our culture to a point. And I think, you know, you can definitely master something and really dive right in. And people mm-hmm. do. And I think great things happen when that, you know, someone really just gets really deep with something.
Yeah. Mm. I guess it's, you know, it's what you feel called to. And if, you know, if you've got a burning passion to focus on one thing to the point that you become a true master of it, then go for that. Mm. And definitely, there's nothing wrong with that. But it comes at a cost, you know, in that focus and that kind of narrow look at one area. You're missing a lot of other things, which is fine if that's where you want to go. But for me, it's not where I wanted to go. And it's kind of, I sort of like to, you know, explore lots of different things and different ways of moving. And that's what I think the beauty of a movement practice is that there's so much in it that you can, it's going to keep you busy until the end of my days. You know, it's not any one particular thing.
It's never arriving.
Yeah. And it's notoriously hard to explain to people that don't understand this area at all what it is, like what is it, because it's so many different things. Mm-hmm. And it's
yeah,
it
the
sounds,
word movement doesn't really describe
yeah, exactly.
it
like, okay movement yeah it's not
people
enough.
That know it yeah. get it and yeah. it's brilliant when they do. It's like, oh, okay, but yeah, I'm like, wow, it's kind of like moving with an evolutionary lens, so you're mm-hmm. trying as best you can to move in a way that we would have perhaps when the world yeah. wasn't so flat and the world wasn't so rigid.
Yeah, so we kind of look at the idea of linear strength. Like, we kind of try to break it down, which is rooted in gymnastics, mm-hmm. to where you're kind of set up bilaterally a lot of the time, where you're pushing through linear patterns, mm-hmm. Horizontal, vertical, pushing and pulling, straight mm-hmm. arm, bent mm-hmm. arm strength, all these kind of ideas from the gymnastic world. But then non-linear strength, where we're coming out of alignment, and these are explored a lot through games and physical problem solving, where you've got some sort of physical task that you're working on with a partner, and you have to use your strength, your mobility, your coordination, about how you organize the body to solve the task. And really interesting to explore these kind of things. And it's very interesting to come out of alignment and to think, you know, or not think, almost switch off the thinking mind and just feel as to how to get through these drills. And then locomotion is the other area where we're learning, you know, how to perform certain movements in a sequence, and then with a view to eventually just being able to freely express and mm-hmm. improvise mm-hmm. With the movement practice. But yeah, it's like I said, there's so much in it. It's going to keep you busy for a long time, and it's a rabbit hole. You know, it's the type of thing that once you scratch the surface and you start to, you know, you start to explore these sorts of things, yeah. and you really get the bug for it. There's a lot in
there.
You start
to get curious, right? Mm. About what's possible.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, totally.
So was it you and Bo who did, was it your, the human experience?
No, so Bo and I do run Flow State Collective.
Okay.
So we organise movement classes.
Yes, yeah.
In Battersea Park. Mm-hmm. And then Elliot and Ollie mm-hmm. Run the Human Programme, which
yeah,
is
yeah,
educational.
Yeah. Ollie Frost, right?
Yeah, Ollie yeah. Frost, educational platform where they, you know, they kind of teach people lots of different ways of what it is to be human, so through breath work, through flexibility, all kinds of different things. Mm-hmm. And then we came together and we started the Human Experience, which is this immersive event, which, you know, you're doing something very similar with...
It's very similar.
Tony Little. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so yeah. And it's beautiful. We're at a farm in Chessington that we use for the uh-huh. location there. And we just like to expose people to these different practices and yeah. bring people together. You know, the whole kind of ethos behind that is that you know, it was born straight out of the pandemic, you know, when there was this real sense of disconnection. We're disconnected from each other. We're disconnected from ourselves. We're disconnected from the earth. Like, we weren't supposed to be going outside and getting our feet on the ground. And so this was about reconnecting to all those different things, reconnecting to each other through the physical practices, reconnecting to ourselves through the breath and going inwards and,
yeah, learning how to feel again.
Yeah, connecting to that and just reconnecting in so many different ways and having this really nice community experience together when it's simple things, you know, real simple things, but things that kind of we don't have access to so readily. And it's been incredible.
It's beautiful because the ripple effects of it, you know, someone could just come up, turn it once and it could change the course of their life and that can ripple on through, you know, because all these things you can learn and take away and you can just tap into it anywhere.
Yeah,
that's not, you know, it's you know, everyone's got a broom handle and you can play around
exactly.
with that.
Yeah, yeah.
but even more so, it's just things that, yeah, we can do every day, all the simple things that teaching people that it's not like you have to go to the event to do it, you know. It's
yeah.
powerful.
Yeah, we hear that a lot of feedback from people that they're starting to integrate these practices into their life a little bit more, and that's what it's all about, you know. It's about sharing these things and then getting people to, you know, somehow integrate these things into their lives to make them more human, more or feel more human, feel more connected to that inner guidance system. And yeah, so much of that as well is taken from the work that we've done with plant medicine and in sitting in ceremony and in sharing and talking together in an open way. So there's this like shared vulnerability where everyone just puts something out there and there's no judgment, and it feels really good, I think, for people to have a space or be connected to a space where they can feel safe to do that.
Safe spaces, man, it's just lacking. I don't, just reflecting growing up, it's like where did I actually ever feel safe? You know, in my home, debatably not, because I didn't have the maybe confidence or the language to even express what I was feeling, or on the playground where you just was always trying to either protect yourself or show off or whatever it is. And it's like, oh really? Yeah. What was that doing psychologically? What was that physiological to me?
Yeah.
And that's, it's all stuff that upon reflection, when you're diving deep and you are looking into it, it's like, no, that it's, we need that processing time.
Massively. Yeah, we really do. It's like, I think sharing circles are some of the most powerful medicines out there. When you kind of first, I mean, for me, it was pivotal, like sitting for the first time in that environment and hearing people be so vulnerable, and to be seen and to see other people like that, super powerful and so healing. Because I think when you've got stuff going on and it lives in your mind, it's in this incoherent, jumbled up mess. But then when you share, you're forced to have to articulate it in a way that people can understand, and in doing that you start to give it a little bit of a narrative yourself so that you can maybe make sense of it a little bit more.
And even more powerful when someone goes, oh yeah, me too. And you're like, oh fuck, not just me. This is quite normal to have these doubts, have these worries and have these flaws and just accept them in that way.
Often we, you know, can definitely think that we're the only people that are going through all this stuff, and then you hear and you're like, oh wow, that people, everyone's going through it, you know, we're all going through it, and we can all learn from each other. And what I also find is there's this shared learning that happens in a sharing circle where everybody will speak and you can literally resonate with something that every single person says, and then they're kind of the way that they've navigated their way through it will resonate with you, and you'll be like, oh yeah, okay, I hadn't thought of it like that. So this is collective learning experience when you just share from an absolute place of truth and honesty. It's powerful.
Yeah, and trust. I think in those spaces it's like trusting that it's going to be held and not, you know, thrown back at you or judged, or that is just incredibly powerful. So when we talk about like a safe space, it's like, it's the lack of judgment and maybe even the accountability factor that other people are actually going to ask you questions and call you forward, not call you out, call you forward to be like, okay, why is that? And are you going to do something about that? And that kind of energy is so incredible, especially for men to do that. But there's a big difference between,
I've seen it a lot with men, like being that, having access to that kind of thing is super powerful. Which is why we've got our first men's circle tomorrow, actually.
Oh, really? Wow.
Jamie Clements, the Breath Space on Instagram.
Yeah, he was at the recent Human Experience.
Yeah, he teaches the breath there.
Yeah.
And yeah, so we've got Find the Others is this initiative that we've started, which is a, like you say, a safe space for men.
Uh-huh. Where's this then?
This is at Soma Lab.
Okay.
Yeah.
As in the Soma breathwork, is that connected to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think probably there's something around the naming. I've just of known them
as
connected to that
as a YouTube channel.
Soma Lab. Yeah.
S O M A.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, maybe.
So yeah, we've got that happening tomorrow, which is going to be great, and we're going to.
It would have already happened by the time. Yeah. Let's not quick on happened. The train tonight.
There we go. It's happened in the past. There we go. So that's going to be good. Looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Nice,
yeah,
man.
And connecting with some men there to just share what the challenges, the mm-hmm. trials, the tribulations, you know, what's alive in them right now for what it means to be a man, and mm-hmm. you know, and connecting with other men and sort of sharing so we can learn from each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. Mm-hmm. What are you most excited about apart from this? Anything coming up? Is it?
Yeah.
What your what the journey looks like ahead? Do you are you someone that plans for a few years and for, you know, taps into a vision of where you're going to be and really try and call that in?
Yeah, I mean, what's been working for me is kind of leaning into the thing that excites me the most, where, you know, it's almost like the inner whisper of this internal guidance system that's mm-hmm. calling me to something, but really feeling connected to that and moving in that direction. Has been powerful because it's brought some really amazing things into my world that that years ago I wouldn't have been able to imagine that they're happening now. So mm-hmm. now I've got a very strong vision for what I want for the future that involves you know, building a community and starting to live off of the land and feel, you know, sort of separating out from this system a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's happening a lot.
Yeah,
noticing it more and more. Mm-hmm.
And so I've got a retreat in Portugal in on the 10th of October, mm-hmm. and this is working with plant medicine, so it's working with psilocybin out there. And the retreat, I'm really excited to. I haven't been out there yet, but I'm going out there in July to connect with the guys that own the land there, because I think they're just doing such amazing work. You know, they're growing food there, and they're it's called Aterra, which is all about returning to the earth, and the retreat is called Return to Nature. So there's so much synergy with what we're about and what they're about, and from our initial conversations there's a real nice connection there. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's going to be super powerful. Got some incredible musicians coming out for the retreat as well, so it's going to be really nice to have their medicine played out for everybody in this kind of setting. And yeah, I think, you know, for a group of us who've been involved in this kind of space for a while, it's you know, something we'd like to potentially set up for ourselves going forwards is this idea of getting land and holding ceremonies and mm-hmm. teaching people how to move, how to breathe, you know, all these different practices, exposing them to the heat, the cold, and working with plants if they feel called in a safe way. Then yeah, sharing that kind of work with the world is what's really exciting me a lot going forwards,
because the potential is great.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, you know, I see how much it's done for me, mm-hmm. and how pivotal it's been in, you know, from the point of me finding it in my life, the direction that my life's taken. And I see, you know, how much it's helps people that you know, I know that have had these kind of experiences, mm-hmm. and have been able to share with them. It's profound. And you know, I think these things are here. They're for a reason. They're on the earth for a reason, for mm-hmm. us to connect with them. And, you know, this is why all the research is all pointing in the same direction of their amazing ability to relieve people from depression. But, mm-hmm. you know, it's not. I don't think you need to be depressed to benefit from them. I think you can kind of go into it feeling, you know, not depressed, and then elevating yourself even further from where you're at.
Yeah, it's good, man. I like that you take mostly every opportunity to speak to it, because it shows that that it's not just, you know, one aspect. It's like this can be the thing that really moves people in the direction that it is what generally that life is about, bringing us back into a state of balance mm-hmm. more than anything.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel...
I'll just be mindful of time.
Yeah, where are we at? It is.
Aha, uh-huh. Yeah, we'll wrap it up.
Yeah?
I got to shoot, yeah.
Okay.
10 minutes.
Yeah, no, I just think... yeah, these things are super, super powerful. And I feel like for such a long time, they've been prohibited from us, from our our ability to work with them, and it's about reclaiming that in a modern context and sort of understanding how we can work with them in the best possible way to bring ourselves back to that authenticity and strip away all these ideas of who we thought we were that are not serving us and move it, step into this version of ourselves that is more aligned to that, that authenticity.
Bringing back that empowerment comes to mind, but it is that embodying powerfulness that we all have, we all are. But we can get so bogged down with what we need to do, what we think we need, like all these things to be healthy, and it's just stripping all that away for me.
And
realizing that you are powerful and you have the capacity for great things and to change, and many people do it. They demonstrate it all the time. Like, we can search this stuff and understand like where someone was to where they got now, and it's they're no different to me and you,
Yeah, they're no different. I mean, I think the one thing that we do have is that no one can be you better than being you, and that's the power there, is to not try to be somebody else and to kind of be a carbon copy of somebody else, but to just find that inner connection to that guidance system. And I do believe it is a guidance system that is in there, but I just think we find it difficult to hear it because of the way we live in this society where we're eating a load of shit, we're not moving our bodies, we're not connected to the earth. We lose that connection to that inner guidance system. But I think if you can live in a way where you're a lot healthier, you're moving a lot more, you're eating the right foods, and you're allowing space and time for introspection, to be silent, to sit with your own mind, and to kind of let that, watch what happens, then you can start to slowly hear those little faint whispers of what that inner guidance system is calling you to.
Yeah, and it might be just the things that aren't right for you. So for a long time I was just saying, okay, like a sacred no to a lot of things. That's what I don't want to do. I don't want to be doing that. You might not necessarily know exactly what you want, but by tapping into that is like what's not right for you. And I think we all know that more than anything.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Cool. Let's wrap it up, man. Do you want to point anyone to anyone? And Instagram is the best place to
Oh, yeah. If you can check out Flow State Collective, or if you just search that on Google, it will come up. And then thehumanexperience.uk. The retreats, we don't have a website for, but if anyone is interested in those and feels called to the retreats where we're working with psilocybin, then just get in touch on Instagram, Sesto Flow. Go from there.
Nice, man. I'm cross promoting. Feels great. Love it, man. Sweet.
Cool, bro.
Thanks for listening. Appreciate your time. Please head over to Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Leave a review. Tremendously helpful. If you could do that, that would be great. I hope you enjoyed the podcast, and communicate with us either by email, Instagram, ask us any questions that you wanted us to go in deeper with. Always here for a connection. Thank you. Speak soon.